This episode is an exclusive insight into the views of the LGIM investment team on what's happening in markets and what this means for investors. This podcast is intended for investment professionals. If you're enjoying LGIM Talks, why not subscribe in your Apple Podcast or Spotify app to make sure you never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome to this special CIO market update from LGIM, which we're holding in the wake of the 2020 US presidential election. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Jason Shoup, Head of Global Credit Strategy, LGMA, and Tim Drayson, Head of Economics. As usual, our podcast listeners can find the presentation in this episode's show notes. Now, as we're all still waiting for the dust to settle, let's kick off with a quick stock take. Sonia, what do we know so far about the results, and how have markets reacted?
Thank you, Max, and a very warm welcome to this US election special. Well, quite exciting the night has been, and we still don't have a final result. I think what is clear is, though, that Trump has once again substantially outperformed his pre-election polling, probably even more than in 2016, because if you look at the hurdle as measured in pre-election polling, it clearly was much higher than in 2016. And I think it's clear to say as well that America remains divided. Now, as we are waiting for the final results coming in, it's very clear that it will come down to three states predominantly, and these are Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and we obviously still look very closely at Nevada and Georgia. There's still a number of possibilities and obviously outcomes, although, and you see this when we look at the market reaction in a minute, that it seems that the path for Biden to win seems currently what the betting odds would favor. Obviously, one of the key risks is that we might get a contested election. And again, this is something we can't rule out at this stage, but I guess a lot will depend on the results coming from these remaining states. Now, when we look at the market reaction, then it's very clear that very early on, when the market were coming to terms with the fact that the expected blue sweep was not going to materialize, then we have seen a bit of an adjustment within the market positioning. Because the blue sweep is very much linked to a very strong fiscal stimulus, and as such, we have seen ahead of the election, obviously, government bond yields moving up. We have seen a slightly weaker dollar, and we have seen equity markets obviously expecting a strong showing on the back of this. Now, immediately what we have seen is lower government bond yields. We have seen a stronger dollar, a bit like a haven reaction function, and we have seen actually Europe opening lower. Now, you will see that some of this has already reversed, and this might be partially linked to the better odds for Biden winning the presidential election. But likewise, obviously, and you will see in a second, this, we have to assess the presidential election against the backdrop of the ongoing global pandemic, and hence, obviously, looking at what the political options and the economic choices and the economic outcomes are over the coming weeks. More on this later, but now, as usual, I would like to spend a few minutes on the virus development, because as I just said, whether it is Biden or Trump, they will have to face off that the virus is still going very strong. And you see here the dramatic increase in new cases in Europe and obviously likewise in the US. And so hence, obviously, the measures that need to be put in place to offset potentially second lockdowns will be first and paramount for any incoming president. It is worrying to see that these new waves are widespread, and that likewise, as you see on the right-hand side, hospitalization rates are going up, and hence we have to assume that the U.S. might experience, with a slight delay, a similar setup as we are now having here in Europe, where not only regional but even national lockdowns are again imposed. And obviously Tim will take us through the potential economic consequences of this in a moment. Now, what it might help, and this is a very interesting effect that we have seen playing out across Asia, is that because of obviously the hygiene measures that have been so strongly imposed on populations in terms of hand washing, the social distancing, wearing of masks. It looks like that the flu season, which as you recall was a major fear that you would literally have a double impact on your hospitals because of the normal flu season plus COVID, and that obviously that would lead to large strains across the medical sector. But as it stands, we probably can assume that the experience in Europe and the US might be similar to what Asia has seen, flu season has been incredibly mild to non-existent, and hopefully hence should help the way we can deal with COVID-19. Now, in terms of the economic implications, we have been jokingly trying to figure out, if you look at the green line, whether this is a half W or something else. But clearly, as you can see, we have to expect the more stringent the lockdown measures, the more severe the economic impact will be, although you can see very clearly that we do not forecast the impact to be as severe as it was back in March. And that obviously is simply related to the adjustment processes that have been taking place. And we have to assume that overall the economy is better prepared to deal with a second lockdown than we were back in March. You see as well that a lot will depend on the measures being implemented. The more severe the measures, obviously, the more severe the economic impact. And we would imagine that the picture here, which is our US GDP scenario, would look very similar across most of Europe. Now, with that in mind, I would like to finish off that, of course, any news flow on the vaccine development is incredibly important for any normalization. Right now, the entire emphasis and focus, quite rightly, is on managing the second wave. But it's very clear that the second wave in itself can only lead to normalization if we finally were to get a vaccine. So with that in mind, back to the US election, but we felt it's incredibly important that for any new government coming in and the new president, dealing with the current situation is the most important political decision. We know that the market has been desperately waiting for more fiscal stimulus. And so it's very interesting to see, with the uncertainty still around what the new government will look like, to have a think through what the implications are economically and then for markets.
Well, thank you very much for that overview, Sonia. And yes, let's turn to Tim now. Tim, how does the US political situation, in particular the shrinking odds of the blue sweep that Sonia just mentioned, how does that affect your view of the macro outlook for the US and the world? And is 2021 likely to be the year of reflation?
Thank you very much, Max. So as Sonia outlined, the near-term US outlook will be dominated by the extent and disruptions caused by the potential second wave of the virus, rather than the election outcome itself. In the aftermath of the election, there is a potential path for some modest fiscal stimulus in the so-called lame duck period. That would be necessary to replace the fading impact from the first round of measures. But if we get into any type of kind of contestion around the election, that would likely push any action out into next year, which I think is probably the most likely scenario. So if we then discuss 2021, any fiscal stimulus now looks increasingly likely to require bipartisan support. So the prospect of ending the filibusters appears gone, with the Senate either remaining controlled by the Republicans or close to a tie. The one good news is that whoever's in the White House, I think, would be prepared to sign off whatever package is delivered to and from Congress. But with Republicans now wielding more influence than expected in the Senate, any aggressive Democrat spending plans which originate in the House are far less likely to be brought forward into law. I still think there's a chance that spending could increase significantly, but it would likely be linked towards pandemic relief rather than attempts to permanently increase the role of government in expanding demand in the economy. So, again, kind of tying in Sonia's remarks, the prospects for a strengthening in growth next year probably hinge more on a successful distribution of the vaccine rather than a radical policy shift from a blue wave which has failed to materialize.
Well, thanks for that, Tim, and staying with that theme, what does all of this mean for the outlook for US inflation and the Federal Reserve?
So we have a Fed meeting tomorrow. I think they're always likely to skip any significant policy action and wait for clarity around the election. But the Fed itself is starting to run out of options. I think they continue to provide a backstop for markets, but their big message is going to be calling for additional fiscal support, and that's the job of Congress. And on your inflation question, the fiscal policy was the one tool which could have generated a much higher inflation if it was deployed very aggressively. But with the result of the election, it seems like any stimulus will probably be more modest.
Right, well, bearing all of that in mind, let's drill down into the key equity market implications of this state of affairs. Sonia, could you please talk us through the what investors should expect on stocks?
Absolutely. So as I said right at the beginning, there's obviously been large expectations around a blue sweep and hence obviously large additional fiscal measures, as Tim has just outlined. And that in itself obviously is important to stimulate economic growth and hence obviously as a consequence trigger equity earnings growth. Now, as we've highlighted a number of times, if you look at the slide in front of you, it's very clear that the recovery in equity markets has been far from even, and that we have had a small group of stocks that, in fact, have been dominating the performance of global indices and obviously mostly in the U.S. And you can see that the tech sector here on the right-hand side obviously has been the driving force. As you very well know, even within the tech sector, it has been a handful of dominating stocks that have been delivering the majority of returns. I think what clients and investors now need to consider is potential implications of a, you know, Biden government. The blue sweep obviously is a lot less likely than prior to the election. Because the question I think that is incredibly interesting here is, are we going to see a rotation? And we have seen to some extent investors positioning for this prior to the election, given the high expectations for a blue sweep. And we have seen stocks benefiting for a potential reflationary scenario and outperforming a little bit. It's not been a full rotation yet, but we have seen at least some positioning. Banks would have been clear beneficiaries of this. And I think the question that we have to ask now is, will we see a continuation of the pre-election trend with technology and growth and momentum stocks dominating, or is there still a chance for a more rotational equity market movement? And a lot will come down, obviously, to what Tim has just outlined in terms of the not only the size of potential fiscal measures, but obviously the way it will be deployed will play an even role. Obviously, equity markets are not acting in isolation, and hence we have highlighted the move in government bond yields already. But I think net-net, and this is what the market is currently telling you, with the pandemic obviously continuing to go up in terms of new virus cases and the potential economic impact, it's very clear that further stimulus, further support is needed. And we do expect that both fiscal and monetary will remain supportive. And as such, it probably was always to be expected that the election would finally end a couple of weeks of uncertainty. It would be positive for risk assets. But what is very clear is that the magnitude and the beneficiaries will look different depending on the final outcome of the election. And I think this is what we should bear in mind. So we believe that it remains constructive for risk assets, but it is not clear yet how obviously the fiscal stimulus will lead potentially to a sector rotation within markets. And so we have to wait and see for the final outcome to draw a clearer picture here.
Right, well, that's a great point to bring in our US-based colleague, Jason. Firstly, how late did you stay up watching the results? And secondly, more importantly, what does all of this mean for global credit markets?
Hi, Max. Thanks for having me today. I think the trickiest decision last night for me was when to go to bed, right? And so mine was in the wee hours of the morning when it looked like some of the results in these states that Sonia has just mentioned would not be determined before the night was out. Thankfully, I did get enough sleep, but I think I'm cogent enough this morning to share some thoughts. So credit markets. I think, you know, you've heard about equity markets quite a bit, and we talked a little bit already about the move that we've seen in interest rate markets this morning as well. Credit is one of those asset classes that gets caught in the middle between those two adjacent markets. And so the signals, in the aftermath of the election are somewhat conflicting and mixed at the moment, right? In the higher quality parts of the credit market, Generally, we measure credit and how it performs on a basis of the spread to government bonds. Given that rates are down so much this morning, that's not necessarily helpful for compressing that spread to government bonds. That said, the more equity-like you get in credit, the more you move down the risk spectrum, the more you move into asset classes like high yield, for instance, the more yields matter, and the more that the fact that government bond yields have collapsed is a positive. So an asset class like high yield, I would say, is poised to do better after the collapse in rates here. You heard Tim talking about the prospects of fiscal reflation, and I would say as the blue wave has failed to materialize, the risk of fiscal reflation and much higher rates in the future has really been taken off the table. And I would say another way of saying that is that the reach for yield environment that we've become accustomed to for the last, 5 years or so is likely to persist. So very positive the further down in credit quality you move within the credit markets, and a little bit less positive and more unclear the higher up in the spectrum you are in credit markets.
Well, thanks for that, Jason. And is it possible to discern what sort of policy action markets are pricing in?
Yeah, I think the clear and obvious one is that the fiscal reflation trade is off the table. What's less clear and far too soon to tell is what will take its place from a policy perspective and policy priorities. Clearly, which president or who we have as a president it will matter in that regard. But we know that the Senate majority, whether it goes to the Dems or the Republicans, will be razor thin. It'll be a Senate that will be very difficult to get policy measures through, for the president to get policy measures through, and one in which we're going to need to see some sort of bipartisan spirit. If Biden wins, I do think that there's a sense that we'll get quite a bit of gridlock, and there won't be a lot of policy that comes through other than maybe some direct virus pandemic fiscal stimulus support in modest size. But Biden's an interesting candidate. He definitely brings back potentially the bipartisan spirit of yesteryear in the U.S. in the 80s and the 90s. Could he potentially outperform that sort of expectation of gridlock and actually deliver things like infrastructure by reaching across the aisle? I would say the odds are that it will be tough going, but that's something that's absolutely worth watching and seeing if he sort of lives up to that label as being the politician of a few decades ago.
That's a really fascinating insight, Jason. Thanks for that. Let's move back to Tim now. Tim, how has the asset allocation team been positioning into the election and in its aftermath?
Thank you, Max. So the multi-asset team's also been monitoring markets through the night. Just taking a step back, the team added some equity market risk after the market has sold off in recent weeks on the deteriorating virus news. And then this morning, we took some profit on this trade, given the kind of limited market reaction to the risks around a contested election. I mean, this is a highly tactical move. We could change position very quickly again, depending on the outcome of the election. And if we did get a risk-off episode for the market to kind of worry about the uncertainty, we'd probably look to add back in.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Tim. And moving back to Jason, big picture, what final insights can you offer us as someone experiencing this key risk event on the ground for non-US based investors?
Yes. So I have, a few points that I think are worth highlighting. One, despite the risks and fears that we had that this would be an election that would be very volatile at the polls, it didn't seem to be the case. We don't have any rioting in the U.S. right now that I'm aware of. There weren't any reports of voter intimidation. We got record turnout in the U.S. during this election, and we did it all in the midst of the pandemic. So I think there's a bright silver lining there as we wake up and digest all of this news this morning. Second sort of point would be that the betting markets were much better than the polls. The polls in 2016 got a lot of flack and criticism after the fact, but they weren't really all that wrong. This time, however, the polls, I think, were pretty terrible as indicators of ultimately what the vote count looked like in each of these states. There was a lot of talk prior to the election about the possibility of shy Trumpers, if you've heard that term. I'm not so sure it's shy Trumpers so much as it's just the new normal of trying to do polling in a world where everyone has a cell phone and there are quite a mobile phone. There are quite restrictive rules in the U.S. about calling up and polling individuals via their mobile phone, right? So that's definitely something that will continue to evolve, and there's a lot of room for improvement. Democrats, I think Democrats are going to be deeply disappointed with the outcome of last night, even if Biden ends up becoming the president. In particular, they lost a lot of support among Hispanics and Blacks. The canary in the coal mine was Miami-Dade County right at the beginning of the night. That's an area, obviously Miami, around Miami, where Clinton won by a significant margin and Biden won, but won by much less, suggesting that he really lost a lot of Hispanic votes. So Trump, we knew and expected to lose a lot of support among suburban white voters, but he made inroads elsewhere, and that was a surprise. He made inroads with these minorities within the U.S. The Republicans are going to have a net gain in the House. That was a surprise as well. They'll have a stronger minority now than they did heading into this election. I think my final point here will be that it will be very interesting to see how the Democratic Party interprets these results in the U.S. Do they take the view that they were too progressive, or do they take the view that they were not progressive enough? A large portion of America seem to be validating the point that they weren't willing to be as progressive as the Democrats were indicating, but we'll see how the Democrats themselves interpret this when they do their postmortem. And what does that mean for Nancy Pelosi and the leadership? I think her leadership is more in question now than it's probably ever been in the last 5 to 10 years.
Really useful, strong insights there. Thank you for that, Jason. Let's turn now to geopolitics. Sonia, it's obviously very early days, as we've just been discussing, but what do you think the key geopolitical themes are for investors to watch in the days and weeks ahead?
Thank you, Max. I think very clearly, and this is a topic that we have picked up a number of times prior to the election, is obviously the question around the U.S.-China relationship, and depending on who will come out as the winner of yesterday's election, it's very clear that that relationship will play a key role. And it was obviously very clear as well that a lot of Americans are actually looking at China in a very unfavorable way, and Trump did get a lot of credit around the stance that he has established towards China. So that clearly is something that we are going to watch very carefully. We're watching as well what the noise is that is coming out of China. But I think at the end of the day, let's face it, the situation around the pandemic and the way this will influence the longer-term structure of the U.S. economy and the global economy, we've talked a lot about economic scarring and the longer-term implications, is what ultimately will determine to a large extent the immediate policy measures. We've talked about the accelerating theme concept in the in the against the backdrop of the global pandemic. And there is quite a number of those that will be incredibly important for us to have a good understanding around. Policy measures is another one, and obviously both Tim and Jason have highlighted what the expectations are around not only fiscal measures, but central bank policies as well. You recall that we have started contemplating whether we have seen the floor in yields. We have talked about the slight run-up in yields ahead of the election. Some of this is unraveling this morning. But nevertheless, I think these will be the main topics that will be with us for 2021 and beyond. And obviously, it is now about understanding the short-term influence of policy measures. And as we've heard from Jason very clearly, there is quite a few question marks out there yet. What I thought was particularly interesting is this question mark around bipartisan politics. Can we even get those two parties together to achieve a favorable outcome, despite the fact, as Jason highlighted, it will be very tight in the Senate in particular? So rather than having a stalemate, can we see potential progress against this backdrop? But I think it is very important, really, to understand the long-term thematic implications of what's been unfolding currently around us, because I guess policymaking can only aim to address and alleviate short-term pains and make sure that the longer-term economic trajectory is forward-looking and is understanding what the long-term implications are of what's currently happening.
Thank you very much for that perspective, Sonia. Just finally, you know, are there any other key themes from the election that you would like to highlight here? And is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish up today?
Yeah, energy transition is a very interesting one, and I guess will depend to some extent who will be the winner in terms of the presidential race. And it's very clear that we have different opinions here. It's a topic that definitely has been, you know, waiting for a U.S. response to it. We know that in Europe this is treated differently. So I guess that will remain a big question and until we have had the winner of tonight. But as I just said, to my mind, it is the big themes that will continue to drive the market backdrop. And I think once again, we've highlighted the potential for sector rotation, stock rotation, and coming back to obviously the slide I had on the equity markets, understanding the long-term implications of the current economic and pandemic environment will be very important in allowing us to identify investment opportunities. The same is true to what Jason has just said. And I think we believe as a house that there is a great investment opportunities, but it's very clear that we have to be more selective, because the structural shift that we're witnessing will probably create a much bigger divide between the relative winners and the relative losers. On a sector, on a regional level, even within sectors, there will be potential for picking up those companies that will emerge stronger on the back of the current crisis.
Well, that's a really important point on which to end this week's call. I'd like to thank you, Sonia, Jason and Tim, for your time today, and thank all of our clients for logging in. We'll be back again on the 10th of December, when Sonia will be joined by Emil van den Heiligenberg and Will Riley to discuss the outlook for 2021.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.